but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
All right, it was a few years ago. I was contemplating leaving the newspaper. The safety of the newspaper world, the security of the newspaper world. I was looking around the newsroom. I'm going, this place is dying. It looks like a casino in Reno. I need to get out of here. I need to go do my own thing. I knew that our next guest was already doing it. Mark Stein, the Stein Line. You may know him from ESPN, the New York Times, the Washington Post. He is... if not the best NBA reporter in the country, he's one of the one or two. Maybe he and Ben Golliver are my favorites. And Mark Stein was doing it already. And he was on his own. He was on Substack. He's got the Stein Line there. And if you're a Blazer fan or an NBA fan, you should be subscribed already. You should go grab a free subscription or a paid subscription to the Stein Line. But I reached out to him and I peppered him with some questions. And he was nice enough to help me out and... I don't know if I would have had the guts to do it if guys like Mark Stein weren't already doing it. So I really appreciate him doing that, and as a reward for that, I'm going to drag him onto this show and make him work. So Mark Stein's joining us now. Where are you today, man?
Thank you for the very kind intro. I think you would have done just fine without my alleged counsel. but I appreciate that, man. I am in Dallas. There are no playoff games here. I think even Blazers fans feel better about their situation than Mavs fans do right now.
I'm thinking a little bit about that.
But it's the NBA, man, so it doesn't matter where you are. There's chaos everywhere.
I love it. Help us with the Luka thing. Does the Luka trade make general managers and fans everywhere think that no one's untouchable? Because I have to think that was just a shock to the system.
Yeah, look, this is my 32nd season. I've never seen a trade like it. The only thing I can personally compare it to, and there's a lot of personal involved in this, but my very first trade deadline, it's funny, one of my first road games ever was in Portland. I was thrown onto the Clipper beat halfway through the 93-94 season. I remember one of my first stops was in Portland, and 10 days into my beat writing life, the Clippers traded Danny Manning to the Hawks for Dominique Wilkins. But that trade is really known as the Dominique Wilkins trade. And even though, you know, Dominique was in his 30s at that point, there are some similarities in terms of Dominique Wilkins is still the Hawks. To this day, he is the most famed Hawk and the player synonymous with the Hawks. And so the Hawks just abruptly dealt him to the Clippers when the Hawks were actually leading the East that year. And that was the year that, of course, Michael Jordan had just retired. So the Hawks, you know, finally Michael Jordan is out of their way and they trade Dominique Wilkins to the Clippers. There are echoes of that in what this was like. But even saying that, there is no comp. There is just not. Nothing compares to a 25-year-old generational superstar who was not asking for a trade to be traded in the middle of the season, in the middle of the night, months after he took your team to the finals. It's just never happened.
Nico Harrison, of course, people here in the Portland area think about him going to high school. They think about his work at Nike. Now they're watching him kind of squirm under the scrutiny in Dallas. And there's nothing the Mavs can do about it here in the postseason. It's the worst. It's not like Ryan Day in Ohio State where they have a chance to go win the national championship and he survives losing to Michigan. He's got to wait a while. How is he doing managing that?
look, and because your audience knows him and knows the Nike history, I mean, it is a fascinating case in itself, because his approval rating in Dallas on February 1st was absolutely sky high. He made two big trades at last season's deadline that took a Mavs team that was only about five games over 500 and helped set them on the path to where that team ended up in the finals. And Nico was beloved in Dallas. And again, after this trade, in all of my years and all of my time, I have never seen a fan base angrier with the GM than Mavericks fans are. And Mavericks fans will not rest until there is a change in the front office. There's no games now, so things have quieted down to a degree. But, I mean, again, we've both been doing this a long time. I can't remember a scenario where the GM can't sit in his usual seats. I mean, he's basically standing in the tunnel because, you know, he just can't sit there. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we do this is, you know, you're going to, you know, in sports, you always end up seeing something you've never seen before. And for me, this whole thing is that situation.
Mark Stein with us, the Stein Line on Substack. If you're an NBA fan, you're enjoying this talk, make sure you check it out. Mark, you watched Greg Popovich hang it up. His legacy, in your mind, what first came to mind when you heard he was just going to the front office and he'd coach no more?
Well, look, I mean, that's another, you know, obviously I've been based in Dallas for nearly 30 years, but, you know, you were talking at the beginning about newspapers. You know, one of the big lures for me to come here, you know, I was covering the Lakers in Los Angeles, but I was doing it for the LA Daily News, which was really the third biggest paper in the Southern California market. To come to the Dallas Morning News, even though the Mavericks in the 90s were a laughingstock, I mean, the Dallas Morning News was pretty much the preeminent sports section in the country. I mean, on Sundays, when I got here in the mid-90s, I mean, the sports section used to be three separate sections within itself. And, you know, being the college football devotee that you are, you know, like the morning news had a byline on every important college football game on a Saturday anywhere in the country. Like just pages and pages and pages of college football coverage. And so when I moved here, the Mavericks were a disaster. They literally were the laughingstock of the league, but it's like, hey, you cover Texas. We cover Texas. The Mavericks season is over, but that means in the playoffs, you just cover the Rockets and the Spurs. So covering Greg Popovich, you know, he took over for Bob Hill in November of 96. I got to Texas in April of 97. I basically covered all five of the Spurs championships, I consider it to be one of the true blessings of my career that I was able to cover him so closely. And look, his influence, his impact, his rise from Division III coach to what he became. Look, he's not everybody's cup of tea. There's a lot of people who don't like him. There's a lot of people who focus on the clashes with sideline reporters and the brusque manner at times in press conferences. But you just, if you really study the Spurs, everyone who has gone through that franchise, everyone with the exception of Kawhi Leonard, just loves Pop so much, and more importantly, is convinced that his way was the way. And you see, you know, he was stricken in November by this stroke, you know, just horrible story before a game. Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili have not left the man's side virtually in the last, you know, 7-8 months. I mean, it just, you don't see that kind of relationship often in pro sports where, like, you know, these Hall of Famers just love this man so much. And I think you know, that tells you something when players of that stature still, like, want to be at his side and support him, it should tell you that the Pop we see, you know, in public is not the behind the scenes Pop.
Mark Stein with us, the Stein Line covering the NBA. The playoffs start and road teams in this second round go on the road and you know, they go 4-0, and you've got a team in New York, 2-0 on Boston, and the Warriors get one at Minnesota that surprised a lot of people. What's going on with the home court in the second round?
to be honest, I feel like home court advantage has been eroding steadily for years. Really, if you look at the last 4 or 5 years in the league, teams are only winning about 54% of their home games. You know, when teams used to win, I mean, the league average was much closer to 60, and it's just been steadily declining. I think some of that is the three-point shot. Obviously, you're never out of it. I mean, the Knicks just uncorked two comebacks from 20 points down in back-to-back games. We've literally never seen that. So the three keeps you in it. But, yeah, I just think there has been a steady erosion of home court advantage really for the last half decade. It probably started with COVID to a degree, but it doesn't appear to be coming back.
I am looking at the Warriors, and it looks to me like Steve Kerr's mission here is to try to get this series back where Steph can be healthy. This game three feels awful important back in the Bay Area, but how do you sort of read this Minnesota Golden State series after two games?
I mean, the problem he's got is it just doesn't sound like anything is realistic for Steph before game six. I mean, you know, Stephen Curry has battled injuries before, but never a hamstring injury. And, you know, he's in his mid-30s now. I mean, this is just horrible timing because they won that Houston series. And look, I think Minnesota is very underrated. You know, there were only four teams in the league that were top 10 in both offense and defense, and Minnesota's on that list. Everybody knows about the Thunder and the Cavs and the Celtics, but the Wolves are on that list. And because they only finished sixth in the West, nobody really talks about them. But they manhandled the Lakers in round one. And, I mean, without Stephen Curry, I can't see how they have enough offense to win that series. And are they even going to get Steph back in game six? But, you know, let's see, you know, Jimmy Butler, can he drag them to at least one more win before they get Steph back? The game they already won is pretty miraculous because Steph went out early in the first half, but they're up against a deep team and an underrated team, and it ain't an easy assignment.
I am looking at kind of what we have in play in this playoffs, and it feels like this is very different than the years that we started the season by going, hey, it's two or three teams that can win it. How many teams do you legitimately think in the East and West, how many teams are capable of winning an NBA title this season in your view?
I mean, honestly, it feels so wide open that I think injuries, you know, it's hard to talk about the Warriors when, you know, if they don't have Stephen Curry, that probably rules them out. But, like, it's so wide open at this point that I don't think you should be surprised with any outcome. You know, the Cavaliers, you know, injuries have been a factor for them, but they, you know, they were so good in the regular season, and now they look vulnerable. I mean, really, at this point, no outcome would surprise me. And I guess that's somewhat of a slam on the Thunder, the Thunder's regular season resume is literally as good as it gets. I mean, outside of a win total in the 70s, which they fell a couple wins short of, they did everything they possibly could in the regular season. But people are still going to doubt them until they actually get it done, because that is just what we do in the NBA. And the way they lost game one kind of validated that. See, you know, they're not ready. Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how wide open it is. And what's truly crazy is that, you know, the Celtics just won it all last season, and you would have thought that catapults them to a new level. And, like, they have finished these last two games so poorly, and they've looked so shaky, and you're just watching it saying, how is this possible? Like, when you win a championship, that's supposed to, like, steal you, and now you know how to handle the toughest moments. And, like, they've been so bad in losing the manner in which they've blown these two games. So it's pretty wide open.
The view of the Portland Trailblazers nationally, lay it on us. You don't have to be nice to us. You can hurt feelings here. There's some frustration with the ownership situation, but what do the Blazers look like from your view?
Look, I think they had a pretty good year under the circumstances. I mean, I'm a huge Avdija guy. I've always been. So, I thought that was a steal and a really good move for them even before Avdija had the kind of season he had. And Kimani Kamara is another player who just people are, I mean, they've really, you know, they've nailed those kind of moves. But look, this is a you know, this is a star sport, and you got to get the star right. You know, we did see some flashes of promise from Scoot Henderson in the second half of the season, but I think there's still a lot of questions, like what are they going to do? Like, how they've got all the, I think a lot of teams are actually looking at the Blazers and expecting them to be busy in this offseason because they've got, you know, Anfernee Simons and then a few vets who are all on expiring deals. So they can certainly make some moves. But yeah, Chauncey Billups, it's so interesting because there was such an expectation that he would not stay.
Yeah.
And so to see both he and Joe Cronin get extensions, you know, that certainly was eye-raising too. But it's just interesting. You look at their, you know, basically the Blazers and the Suns had the same record, and the Suns are pretty much, you know, the Suns are in the very firmly in the running for most disappointing team in the league. So it is a matter of perspective and kind of where you are on the development arc. But I think for the most part, it was a good season, but honestly, I'd rather hear your take. You're there every day, and you live it every day. So, like, I kind of want to hear how you see it.
I just feel like the trusteeship thing is weird, and you know, you have Mark Cuban there in Dallas when he was, you know, in charge of that franchise. You know, the fans knew, they could look down and they could see how excited he was and how engaged he was. I don't know that Jody Allen cares one way or another if the team wins, and it feels like they're a little bit on autopilot, and I want to be able to look down to the baseline and see somebody, like, we at least knew Paul Allen loved this thing. I don't think Jody does, and so I think it's a weird ownership structure. It's just a strange thing to not have an owner, have a trustee there, and so the extension of Billups, the extension of Cronin feels a little bit like punting, and, you know, but this franchise, I think the fans were happy with how they played, and they feel, given what's happened to Damian Lillard, come on, Mark. Like, I think fans probably feel like that trade looks pretty good for Portland right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you have Milwaukee's picks, you know, I mean, even if Dame was, I mean, what happened to Dame was so sad, and, you know, the guy's trying to come back from a blood clot, which is just saying that out loud is super scary, and he rushes back, and, you know, it's just, I'm not a doctor. I don't want to pretend like I'm a doctor, but I mean, it's never good to, you know, ramp up and go right into full speed playoff mode when you're coming off a lengthy absence. So, I mean, it's absolutely terrible for him. But yeah, I mean, even if everything was fine, there's so much uncertainty in Milwaukee with Giannis Antetokounmpo's future that, yeah, just having Milwaukee picks in the near future has to excite you if you're a Blazers fan, but I'm really curious to see, like, how active, how aggressive they really are, how available actually is Anfernee Simons. Are they going to shake things up to some degree and try to make a move in the West?
Mark Stein, you can find him on Substack. I am recommending him. I will tweet out a link on my Twitter as well to his work. If you're an NBA fan, you're interested in any of this stuff, make sure that you grab a subscription, either a free or paid subscription to the Stein Line. Mark Stein, thank you for your inspiration, and keep up the fight. Love what you're doing on the website.
Appreciate all the kind words, and man, now I'm just trying to learn from you, since you are you are one of the stars of the Substack sports universe, so now I'm trying to study you.
Well, let's go. You know, and I love it, because, you know, the thing I love about it, maybe you too, is, like, the readers are, you're directly working for your readers now, and there's nobody in the middle of it. And now, you know, and they're in a relationship with you that's very different than you and I experienced at other newspapers.
It is. It is very personal. Very, very personal.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you, man.
Be good. Talk soon.
All right. There he is, Mark Stein. He's the best. Steinline, find him on Substack. Coming up, the BFT jury. Let's do it.